If you've ever seen a visual display of fractals, you were probably impressed. They start with math and lead to physical beauty in ways our guest can explain much better. Dr. Richard Taylor wants to use fractals on people whose eyes do not work correctly, and he and the university and a colleague just got a patent for the idea. Richard Taylor is both scientist, physicist, and artist, trained in painting and photography. He's the director of the Materials Science Institute at the University of Oregon. Dr. Taylor, thanks for joining us today.
Good morning, Jeff.
So how do you describe fractals to non-scientists, non-math people?
Well, fractals, you can see them everywhere when you look around in natural scenery. A classic example is a tree. And what happens with a fractal is it takes a pattern and repeats it at many different size scales. So if you look at a tree and look at the basic pattern that's formed by the big branches, what you'll see is there's smaller branches forming off those big branches and smaller branches forming off those, and they all form these same patterns that repeat at different size scales. And so you can see it in trees, in clouds, in mountains, and they're also prevalent in your body. So your veins are fractal and your lungs are fractal and the nerves in your body are fractal.
Which leads us to the eye thing. I'll get to that in a moment. But the major point with fractals then is the reason that when we're talking about the ones that computers generate, for example, it looks like the same sort of thing, but many times over, progressively smaller, off to the vanishing point.
That's right. So, you know, the classic example is on a computer screen when you look at these fractals, and you can keep on zooming in at finer and finer and finer magnification, and you keep on seeing these amazing, intricate patterns.
So, Dr. Taylor, talk about the ways you've studied and used fractals. It sounds like quite a broad range of fields that you're able to apply there.
Yeah, so I'm very, very interested in a field that's either called biomimicry or bioinspiration, this idea that you can look at nature and learn from what it's doing and then apply that to an artificial system. So I've been doing that across a broad range of subjects, ranging everywhere from sort of learning about artworks through to what we're talking about today, which is, you know, sort of replacing vision for people who've gone blind.
So here again, fractals do occur in nature, and you demonstrated that already. So you're talking about using them potentially as a corrective for nature?
Yeah. So the big issue for the work that we're talking about right now is that increasingly people are going to get electronic implants in their bodies to solve all sorts of medical issues. And the problem is that we have to interface that electronic implant with the body. And what these implants will do is send a signal to the nerves in your body. And the nerves themselves are fractal. If you look at a nerve, it's much like a tree. It's got these branches with smaller and smaller branches. And the problem is that conventional electronics, the sort of electronics that you find in your computer, and that's the electronics that they're using in current implants, conventional electronics doesn't communicate with the fractal nerves very well. So we're kind of concentrating at that interface between the implant and the fractal nerves.
Is part of the point to make more points of contact with the neurons, with the nerve cells?
It is, yeah. What we need is for them to efficiently communicate. Like you say, one of them is to increase literally the overlap so that when the implant generates a signal, it can quickly pass over. But the other thing is just physically to try and fool the nerve into thinking that it's talking to another neuron. And so what we're doing is actually the surface of the implants, we're actually making them to have the same fractal shapes as the nerve that they'll be talking to, so that when the nerve actually sees the implant, rather than interpreting it as like a sort of foreign object, it actually gets fooled into thinking that it's another nerve. And so we'll like to speak to it and pass signals back and forth to the implant.
So communication between the electronics and the biological systems.
Yeah, in both directions usually.
So the approach is patented. What does the and just recently, so congratulations on that. What does the patent cover, and who besides you are the patenters?
Mm-hmm. So we were delighted in that it was a very broad-ranged patent. You know, usually you have a fight with patents to make it broad, but they gave us this basic thing, which is in the future, anything where someone uses a fractal shape to communicate communicate a signal between the implant and the nerve, then it will be covered by this. And it was an international venture between the University of Oregon and the University of Canterbury in New Zealand. You might be thinking, well, why did we bother patenting it? What is the strategy there? And it's basically in response to sort of the funding sort of environment that we find ourselves in, is that you've now, you know, as grant sources get less and less and less, you have to find clever ways of generating money to fund your research. And so we're hoping that through the patent in the future, as this becomes more applied, then the money that comes in will help us then to pour that back into the research and refine our ideas.
So you get royalty payments once the patent is filed? Okay.
Yeah.
Dr. Richard Taylor is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange at the University of Oregon Materials Science Institute. We're talking about the use of fractals and a patent to allow at least further exploration of the idea of using fractals to help cure blindness. We'll talk about specific cases in just a moment. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. What exactly is the Materials Science Institute?
It's an institute, multidisciplinary. It's got physicists, chemists, and biologists, and basically it's researching new materials, both in terms of the basic science, you know, their basic properties, and then also refining them in terms of technology and looking at new uses. And so it's very broad range. It goes from people like me that are looking at new materials to interface with the human body through to what we might call sustainability, things like solar and using electronics that will be more efficient so that we can have cleaner environments, all the way through to some very basic research about, you know, how does material perform when you cool it down to 300 degrees below Kelvin, zero. So it's a very broad range, very eclectic mix of people, very collaborative.
So the proposal that you're talking about here, using fractals for blindness, is there a particular type of blindness you're particularly aiming at?
Yeah, so it is designed for people who have lost vision. It's not designed for people who've been born blind. But one of the amazing things as I got into this research is, looking at the statistics. And I say amazing, but you could replace that with heartbreaking. You know, I used to think that people who lose vision are very uncommon. Increasingly, though, that's not the case. Many of your listeners will have heard of, for example, macular degeneration.
Sure.
And particularly age-related, which as the population gets older, this is going to get more prevalent. By 2050, one in 10 people over 50 will have this disease. And at the moment, there's no cure for it. And so that's what really motivates me. That would be one of the classic uses of the implant, is that in the diseased part of the retina, the back of the eye that receives the light, the disease operates there and wipes out your little detectors. And so the implant would go in and replace those detectors and restore vision.
So, Dr. Taylor, how real is the implant at this point, and how theoretical, and I guess ultimately then how much time and work are ahead?
Right, that's the multi-million dollar question.
Right.
What I was surprised to find out is that this isn't science fiction, it's science fact. So if we concentrate on the eye, there are companies that have already formed and have had implants in the human eye for 10 years. And their implants use the conventional electronics. And the consequence of that is that these implants do work. So they restore vision to the point where you could walk through a door. But because they haven't used our fractal interconnect, they're not speaking well to the nerves. And so what we want to do then is ramp up the performance of the implant so that when you give an implant to somebody, they can see their vision way better. It's not just now that they can walk through a door, but they can actually see almost as well as normal vision. So you'd be able to read people's facial expressions, be able to read text on a piece of paper, and so be able to function again in society.
So there is a precedent here. There are implants that already exist. You're talking about doing the implants a different way, though, a very different way.
Yeah, a very different way, and not just in the eye. So, if we move on to the brain, right now 80,000 Americans are walking around with implants in their brain to combat conditions such as Parkinson's disease. And again, They work, but don't work very well because they're using the conventional electronics rather than our bio-inspired interfaces.
Is the nerve tissue the trickiest to work with? I mean, you've talked about implants all over the body, and I can imagine, based on what we know about the inability of nerve tissue in many cases to regenerate, that this must be a really tricky proposition.
It is, and that's what makes it hard, but what makes it fun. It really is a huge interdisciplinary endeavor because my background really came from developing new electronics for computers, and that's far simpler, putting a little chip into a computer, because you don't have to worry about the fact that you're interfacing with a living thing. And so these implants have to stay in the body for at least 10 years, and they have to work perfectly, and they mustn't be toxic either. They've got to be very friendly to the body. And, you know, so I spend a lot of my time talking to the neuroscientists and the biologists as well, to make sure that this will happen.
Does anybody get a little nervous about the road ahead in the sense of we're talking about cyborgs or, you know, the bionic people or anything like that?
Yeah, you know, the fun thing is that I'm concentrating on human health, but once you start looking at all of the possibilities of the future, it's quite incredible because, like you say, you know, we're designing with our implants to replace a little part of the eye, but you could keep on going. You could then use the same idea to build the whole eye, and then, you know, the same with the different parts of the body, and then in the end you've got a robot. And so, you know, we're well away from that stage at the moment, but there are going to be ethical worries somewhere down the line in terms of how different people use this technology.
Dr. Taylor, is there an actual physical implant model at this point, or is it still sort of a on the drawing board kind of thing?
Yeah, well, we're going very carefully. So stage one was to do all of these simulations using computers, you know, so we don't use a person as a sort of like a guinea pig. That phase one has been done. The computing, the simulations have demonstrated that in theory these things can work very well. Where we're at the moment is we're moving into what are called in vitro experiments. So we actually generate a sort of natural nerves in a petri dish, in a little dish, and then lower our implants into that nerve system. And that's performing very well. And then the next step, which we'll be doing in the next year, is to be moving on to mice and rats and showing that it performs well in a whole, you know, working animal system. And then ultimately we'll move on to a human being.
Wow. So, yeah, definitely a long road ahead. You have already been recognized by the White House for this. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so we've been a couple of times as part of the Obama Brain Initiative, where there's a big initiative at the moment to try and understand how we all think. And to do that, you need these electronic implants to actually look at where all of the signals are passing in the brain when we're doing these cognitive exercises. And so, in the last year, I've been invited twice to the White House to talk to the science and technology people to give them, you know, ideas of where we're going.
Given all the things that you do with fractals on the science side and on the artistic side, I mean, how do you find the time to devote attention to any one, or for that matter, even find the time to catch a good night's sleep?
The fascinating thing and what I love is working at the boundaries between disciplines, because on the one hand, you could see it as a lot of hard work because you're always overwhelmed by having too much information and you never feel like you're in control. But the amazing thing about talking to people in different disciplines is that the ideas flow a lot more easily. You know, if you're buried deep within one discipline, you make little advances. When you work on the interfaces, you make these big leap and bounds because you're talking to people, where there's always fresh new ideas. So it is very, very hard work, but it's very, very exciting and rewarding.
And it's exciting to hear about as well and to talk about. Dr. Richard Taylor is a physicist at the University of Oregon, the director of the Materials Science Institute. He is one of several parties receiving a patent for the idea of using fractals to cure blindness in people who've lost vision. Dr. Taylor, thanks so much for your time today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you very much, Jeff.
All right, take care.